In the Sunday school this morning, the children are participating in our summer series exploring Jewish and Christian traditions. And the subject for today, I think appropriately enough, is Daniel in the Lion's Den. And I point that out not so much to call attention to myself, but to say that yes, we all have very difficult experiences, and yes, we have times where we are tested and placed in the very den of the lion, and we also come out, and we also become better for having had the experience. If you're anything like me, then you're always ready for the next season, and usually that happens well before the current season is over. Like summer, it seemed like a great idea back in April when we still had snow on the ground. But right now, I'm ready for a change. Yeah, the sun and the beach and the heat and the humidity, I get it. They're wonderful things, and I'm ready to move on. I'm ready to move on to crisp nights, light sweaters, warm apple cider of diverse kinds. I'm ready for my Facebook feed to be populated with the cheery photos of family and friends taking their children and grandchildren apple picking. Yes, I want to see those pictures of children and golden retrievers who apparently love to pick apples. I hear that it's the thing to do, going out to the countryside, to a nearby orchard, and picking the choicest apples. Now, I've never done it myself, but I just imagine, you know, as I imagine these things, that people kind of meander through the orchard and they spend time getting acquainted with each and every apple. Is this true, Jess? And sometimes they speak French to the apple and, you know, say, comment ça va? Or speak some other romantic language and rejecting the ones that are poor conversation partners. Or some other apple picking strategy. I don't know. Then the families, they walk away, or individuals, with baskets filled with apples, far more apples than they could ever hope to consume or give away. I prefer to go to the supermarket to purchase my apples, one at a time, maybe one for each day of the week, but clearly that's the less exciting approach to consuming apples. But there must be something to it. There must be something to the apple picking, to walking through an orchard on an adventure day, strolling among the trees that we did not plant, reaching up to branches that we never had to prune. We never got to see the orchard before it was an orchard, when it was an old growth forest. We never chopped down the ancient oaks or chestnut trees that once stood on the land. We never planted the turf grasses. We never cleared away the soil, and we never made the land suitable for anything as delicate as an apple tree. We never dropped the tiny apple seed into the earth, and we never tended the apple tree sapling, hoping that someday it might bear fruit. We never grafted branch to branch to ensure that we would have enough genetic diversity in our orchard. We never cut down the trees that weren't destined to bear fruit. We never even pollinated an apple blossom that would become the apple fruit. We just show up one Saturday in September, basket in hand, and ta-da, apples, ready for the picking. For most of us in this room, the apple might as well be a magical gift that appears whenever we want it. Crafted, handled, carted, and displayed by a long chain of unseen hands. The second generation Canadian farmer, Nelson Henderson, once said that the meaning of life, and I want you to hold on to this, the meaning of life is to plant trees under whose shade you cannot expect to sit. The meaning of life is to plant trees under whose shade you cannot expect to sit. When we visit the apple orchard, we are benefiting from those very same trees that Nelson Henderson talked about planting. But more than that, we're experiencing the crisp deliciousness of grace. Now, by grace, I'm doing two things. I'm reclaiming and reformulating an ancient Christian concept, a concept that has been weighed down over the centuries with baggage, grace that is often construed as this compelling force from a distant God, granting gifts and favor to an otherwise undeserving and unrepentant humankind. This is how it's been described by old theologians, that grace is something that we get despite the fact that we are inherently sinful or fallen or depraved. We are the reluctant recipients of God's grace. But thankfully, Unitarian Universalist anthropology doesn't begin or end with human depravity or damnation. We begin with the worth and dignity of the person and the possibility of approaching divinity through ethical and moral action in the world. So for us, grace moves far and away from the supernatural and tends towards that natural experiences. Grace is the apple tree. It's the reindeer. It's the warmth and thoughtfulness of Aunt Sarah. The Unitarian theologian Henry Nelson Wyman refined a movement that we know today as religious naturalism while he was a professor at the University of Chicago. And he described grace this way, very beautifully, as fellowship, as a creative interchange among people. And I believe that that interchange can occur in real time, like this experience that we're having right now. Or it can be a dynamic and creative interchange that occurs across time, like when we experience the harvest by picking an apple. Grace is simply that receiving of gifts from unseen human hands in the present and from the distant past. We will soon enter the season of the harvest. People all around the world in the Northern Hemisphere will begin picking all the ripened fruits of the summer season. And as we move in that direction, I want us to think again to the words of Ella Wheeler Wilcox, who says that you never know what kinds of things will grow in that productive soil, that each kind act is a seed that you are planting that might one day shelter someone. These words are the beginning of a dynamic process, a process of grace. Grace that begins as an acorn or as an apple seed, popping out of the earth, striving for new heights, flourishing, eventually bearing delicious fruits, and the cycle repeating. When we look at our society, aside from the episodic jaunts to the countryside for apple picking, we really don't interact very much with the cycles and seasons of the natural world. Some of you will remember that I spoke about that 2 weeks ago. In our culture today, we're largely alienated from those processes and alienated from those links, not just to people in the past, but also links to people right in our present. Several weeks ago, in the fellowship hour, a member of the congregation spoke about the linkages between genealogy and spirituality. Yeah, some amazing conversations happen over coffee. And we talked about the possibility of an adult spiritual development class that was built on a sense of cultivating a sense of identity, connection, purpose, the gift of knowing where you come from. And I thought, wow, that's an amazing idea, genealogy as a spiritual practice, a practice that might offer us some gifts, gifts that would be the product of research, genetic testing, census records, interviews. The gift is the ability to name names, to list events, to lift up deeds and misdeeds of past generations. But most importantly, the gift that I'm speaking about, that grace, is knowing that we did not appear out of nothing, but rather we were crafted in a rich chain of somethingness by unseen hands. The singer Issei Barnwell describes us as our grandmother's prayers and our grandfather's dreamings and the breath of our ancestors. There is a powerful spiritual experience that comes from tracing one's ancestry to the extent that we are able. Knowing who our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents are is important. Knowing and transmitting those narratives are crucial for our full development. And for some of us, the record will be more complete than for others. And there are many reasons behind that. If you can trace your ancestry back to Scottish kings, congratulations. If you can trace your lineage back to Kenyan pastoralists, congratulations. If you can trace your ancestry back to Japanese shoguns, congratulations. Or refugees expelled from the Russian Empire, congratulations. Or Indian Brahmins, congratulations. It is good to know, if you can know. Now, before you congratulate yourself for maintaining that subscription to Ancestry.com, or use your smartphones right now to reactivate that membership, I want you to consider this, that our ancestors are not just the people that we are related to by blood or genetics. Our ancestors are more than just what we would understand as family relations in the conventional sense. We must not forget our spiritual ancestors and the gifts that they have left us through their struggles and their hard work. You see, even here, as Unitarian Universalists, we risk thinking that we just make this stuff up as we go. That's certainly what folks outside think. We might forget that we, too, are a people with a rich history of ancestors and antecedents. We're not the first generation to take pride in being heretics, which means simply to make a choice, which means not to accept the rules and precepts simply because they are given to us, but to question. We are not the first generation of people committed to discernment, to testing the spirits and the waters. And I invite us to lovingly hold on to that tension that exists between the free and responsible search for truth and meaning and the claims of wisdom made by those who have gone before us. The resources and experiences of past generations of our spiritual ancestors are the trees planted in the orchard decades and centuries ago that still bear fruit good enough to eat, fruits of knowledge and inspiration, shady trees offering up their delicious fruits. Grace is a creative interchange that links generations of people across time and space. Grace is also the love, the beauty, and the benevolence communicated across time and space. It's the seen works, like this building, of knowable yet unseen hands. And we are all the beneficiaries. At times we're desperate, at times we're blissfully unaware, but we are always deserving recipients of that grace. And as we engage in the task of picking the choicest apples of this tradition, this covenantal promise-making community with its freedom and its responsibility, our task is to learn who planted this orchard that we are now sitting in and to lift up their names. Like William Ellery Channing, who preached the first sermon on what was called Unitarian Christianity, or John Murray, who brought Universalism from England to the United States before there was a United States, or Olympia Brown, who was the first woman to be ordained in any tradition as a Universalist minister, or William Schultz, president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, and also former director of Amnesty International. or Margaret Fuller, a writer, transcendentalist, educator, feminist, or James Reeb, Unitarian minister and martyr, killed in Selma, Alabama, in the last century. We have to remember these people and lift up their names and the names of others, the people who founded this congregation in 1865, who sought to establish a light of liberal religion in Germantown 150 years ago. It is our task to take advantage of all of the opportunities that present themselves from time to time to learn more about these people and others. Our task is to name the names and to celebrate the fact that we are a people with many great stories and a purpose. And this will mean taking an adult spiritual development class or doing some independent reading or interviewing longtime members of the church. It will require us to talk to our friends and our families about what matters most to us, about our values and our beliefs, and the sources for those values and beliefs before it's too late. All of these things are required for us to show our gratitude for the harvest of grace that we have been given. And if we can do this in this congregation and across our movement, I see us regaining our place in the public discourse. Our work for justice and change in the world will be suffused with new energy and purpose. Our spiritual practices will be enriched with the energy of our ancestors. The gifts of those who came before, building on their efforts, their strengths, and their understandings, can inspire us in all of our actions. There's no need for us to reinvent the wheel, because right here where we are, there are an amazing assortment of wheels. They can take us to places we never knew we could reach. Most importantly, through this process, I see a transformation occurring where we can walk confidently in power, knowing that our expressions of faith are not our own alone, but they are in fact the latest iteration of a multi-year, multi-generational, intercultural, and international enterprise. We are standing on the shoulders of many giants. And this is how we will change ourselves, help to change the people we love, and help to change a world desperate to know that something like this is even possible. So the season of harvest as it comes upon us, the season of harvest, when it is here, is a time for us to celebrate the lasting gifts and the many fruits of unseen hands. May it be so, and amen.